Welcome to Break a Wish, the podcast where all your dreams come true, but with terrible, ironic consequences. I'm your host, Maddox Campbell. Joining me this time, we have Mary Chris Rivera.
Hi.
And Christopher Bowman.
Sup, sup.
And the movie we're going to break down this week is The Princess and the Frog, the 2009 Disney film. Let's just start with some experiences. Had you guys seen this film ever before? I'll start with you, Mary Chris.
I have. Let's see. It came out in 2009. I think I saw it in theaters with my niece. And then I've seen it a couple of more times. I guess maybe like a couple of years later when it was available on DVD. Remember that was a big thing?
Yeah, very important. It probably came out of a vault or something. I know that's Disney's normal thing of hiding their films in vaults and then bringing them out when...
Really just gatekeeping there with their films. Yeah, okay. But yeah, so I've seen it a couple of times afterwards, and it's actually been a few years since I've seen it until last night when I was rewatching it and revisiting it. And there's a lot of aspects of the movie that I still very much like, and then some that I was like, oh, I forgot that happened. Okay.
There's always some things in a movie that change as your time changes and your perspective changes. Yeah.
Especially with Disney fairy tale films. Oh, yeah. Boy.
But, like, on the scale of Disney fairy tale films, not that bad, comparatively, to things they've done before.
I'd say so. I'd still rank it, like, in my top five of my favorite Disney films.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty up there.
Mostly just because I've seen them all, because I have a niece and a nephew.
Yeah, I think I missed this one, because it came out in 2009, so that's right when I'm coming out of university and not spending time with any nieces, nephews, or younger siblings anymore.
You know, that's so fair.
There wasn't an excuse to watch the new Disney film. And then it had kind of passed me by. So this was my first viewing. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy it. It's pretty good as far as Disney's go.
Music's great, too.
Had you seen this before?
I had not. No, I had never seen this before. I had been meaning to for years and years and years. But nay, my friend, I had never seen it.
This was sort of one of the starts of Disney realizing... Oh, crap. We need to have more diverse princesses.
We 100%.
we missed a bunch on that and trying to fill some of those gaps. And so, this is set in 1926 Louisiana. And that's so it's got a really strong New Orleans feel to it and really strong accents of that style on all the characters. I'll try to do a quick story synopsis in case any of our listeners haven't seen the film. So the two main characters we get introduced are the princess, who is not a princess at the start. She is a waitress who is working really hard to start a restaurant in memory of her father, who passed away while wanting to have a restaurant and not being able to. And our other character is a prince who's a layabout and lazy and looking to marry someone who's rich because he's been cut off by his parents. The prince... gets turned into a frog by a shadow man, is how he's referred to, a voodoo practitioner, so that his assistant can take on his likeness and try to marry someone and they can get the money instead. But because of curses apparently are contagious, when the prince tries to kiss Tiana to get out of his frogness, she gets turned into a frog too, and they have to fight their way back to stopping the shadow man, meeting many characters in the swamp along the way. And then, of course, because it's a Disney film, they fall in love and things resort themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the major story beats, right? I think I hit everything that you need to know what's going on here, right?
Oh, you nailed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think so.
Sometimes I get rambling in those stories. Is that important enough to be in this? I don't know.
I don't know. There's a like a trumpet playing alligator.
Yeah. Yep. His name is Louis. He wants to be playing with the big boys, but they seem to keep on shooting him. Guns showed up more in this than many other Disneys I've seen.
Truly.
Like, how many guns were shooting at Louis when he jumps off that boat in that one little cutaway?
Oh, all of them. All of the guns were shooting at this poor alligator that just loved the music.
Yeah.
He's holding like, a trumpet. Give him a break. Come on, guys.
They're like, they ate it. He ate a trumpet player. Shoot him.
Yeah. And there was also the scene, we'll discuss the Cajuns a bit more in this, because yeah, they're the example of what's not held up well, but there's like the family of Cajuns who are trying to eat the frogs. I'm pretty sure they shoot the dad's dick off.
Yep.
Not off. He's clearly, like, they didn't breach his heart-shaped underwear.
Yeah.
They alluded to shooting the dad's dick off.
It somehow ripped off the entire top layer of clothing.
But yeah. Not the underwear.
But not the underwear. He must
because
wear
Disney.
Yeah. Bulletproof underwear.
Well, covered in hearts and love conquers all.
Actually, okay, so my thought on that now is if he's got bulletproof underwear, it's not the first time that one of his sons have tried to shoot him.
Oh my God, did you see? You saw how inbred they, like, you presumed that they were. Like, they were straight out of Deliverance, just looking for frogs to eat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're like, you're almost sure that, yeah, their son, cousin, or uncle, brother had at one point shot each other.
As I like to say, there's a couple of wreaths in that family tree.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. So I feel like the fact that he had that strong of underwear implies that he had his dick shot up earlier and was just trying to have it not be shot off again.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't give him
prepared.
Can't give him credit for the forethought. You're just like, no, you'd learn from experience, not from forethought.
Yeah, that's not something you invest in. In that socioeconomic situation, you don't invest in bulletproof underwear.
Yeah.
Unless mm-hmm. it has happened before and you fear it to happen again.
Agreed.
In those waters, who knows?
Okay. Let's talk about some of the magic wishes in this, because we can at least talk about those, because those are definitely something to focus on. They all base around the Shadow Man / Dr. Facilier. Does that just mean Dr. Easy? My French is a little rusty, but like it feels like it's Dr. Easy.
I never thought of that.
Hold on. Let's find out.
You going to look it up for me?
Well, I mean, like, I got this fancy iPad.
Oh, okay.
Might as well.
Yeah, do it.
Facilier meaning.
Oh, yeah. It literally, first thing it pulls up is 10 things you didn't know about the Princess and the Frog. Dr. Facilier is derived from the French word facile, meaning easy.
Yeah.
The idea was that he would lure people and under the guise of giving them all that they wanted with ease, without them having to earn it in the old-fashioned way. In brackets, work.
Yeah, work. I normally earn things.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, that fits really well in the theming of the film, because the idea is that the Tiana works very hard for everything she gets, mm-hmm. and the prince, not so much. And he tempts them with an easy path, which is why he gets turned into a frogman.
Yeah.
And he also, like, yeah, his wishes are sort of like, the way he does it is, you get what you want, but there's a nasty cost, which is kind of my bread and butter over here.
Mm-hmm.
The first one that they do, like, just in a song, they don't even do it as part of the story. There's a bald guy who seems to ask for more hair and gets turned into a wolf man.
Yep.
Yeah, and he has the appropriate amount of the wished hair, likely for like a hot fart of a second, and then all of a sudden it just gets so much more hair.
Yeah. You'll get a glimpse of what you actually wish for.
Yeah, it's all that Chinese proverb, be careful what you wish for kind of thing, of like, if you want somebody to be important to you, they like will kill everybody else on the planet and be like, well, now that person, you're important to that person or whatever. It's all nightmare scenarios. Mm-hmm.
That character has a plot line that could have been in this movie too. Like, the Wolfman could have come back.
Yeah.
The Wolfman in Louisiana now. That feels like that's got a whole story of its own.
He should have been working for his hair just like every other person.
Yeah, what was supposed to be his real path? I guess okay,
love himself. So love yourself. As a balding man, just you gotta let it go, bro. You'll find your balding woman and you'll make little cute babies.
Yeah, well, I think that's it.
Not traditionally
not so much
cute.
That there was a way for him to work to get hair. But more of, he still could have gotten love without getting hair. He could have just put in the charm. Lots of ladies are into the bald hair. It's a good look.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was pretty common, too.
Yeah.
It's the only balding man.
True.
Or he could have worked hard enough and gotten a quality toupee.
Also true.
See, multiple solutions.
Yeah. So I guess, it also looked like he only paid, like, one coin for that. So that was, that's definitely cheap. Paid the Shadow Man, like, a single silver dollar or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not, yeah, clearly if you're going that easy of investment, you're going to get what you pay for. You're going to get Wolfman syndrome.
Yeah.
Second wish of the film is straight to the prince himself. I kind of like how they say, well, he wanted money. So he says, I see a lot of green in your future. Ba-dum-bum-bum, Frogman.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Though it was definitely deceiving because on his tarot card, it definitely showed money, not like just green. It wasn't him dancing in green and turning into a frog. I love those tarot cards, though.
I was going to say, part of the fun of tarot cards is also just like interpretation and what you mean. And like, you know, if this shadow man is luring you with all of this, he can spin it however, like whichever way he wants, and you're probably going to believe him.
Yeah.
Yeah, good presentation, good art design will convince you that magic is real. I like how he could like scroll the cards really long and they just keep on showing more images and stuff and they're flipping them around to make little videos. We got a lot of work out of them.
I'm a big fan of his shadow being able to like interact with the real world. Mm. You know, like straight up at the beginning, like this cat's got a lot of power. Like he, even in the like, yeah, okay, he's barely getting by, but I'm just kind of like, how are you just getting by with this tremendous amount of power? Even as a showcase, just be like, come and see my shadow, like lift up this watch, or like it didn't even have to. It could be so banal, the task it's doing, and people would be like, what? Here's all the money, but no, yeah. Just a sincere lack of imagination.
Deals, he should have just done a cabaret.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I pay to see that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I felt a little bit like most Disney villains have like a sidekick, and I felt like his shadow was his sidekick, like because he was interacting with it as though it was a separate entity. So yes. So maybe the thing that stops your plan from working is that his shadow is also lazy and just wouldn't have learned the choreography.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess no, I can see that. I'm not lifting things for you. You lift things. It's like, that's not impressive, Shadow. No one wants to see me lift things.
Mm, but the Shadows do a little bit of work, like, later on in the movie.
Oh, for sure.
I think they realize they'd still get dragged to hell with him if they don't pay their debts. Yeah. Seems to be, I don't know exactly what currency he paid, I guess. Mm-hmm. Souls. I guess souls was the currency of the underworld.
Looks like that.
Is there any other moments that really stood out for you in this film?
Ooh. I mean, I love the hillbilly firefly Ray.
Yeah, Ray's fun.
I mean,
oh my God, the funeral at the end just like it killed me. It's like, why am I so emotional about this?
Well, because he was the one, like, I found Ray to be like the one real, I just really love that character. Mm-hmm. Because he's adorable and he was in love with a star. Oh, and just to sort of retcon the whole thing, I think the second wish was made by one of the little girls, John Goodman's daughter.
Sure.
I know their names for sure. Yep, definitely. But like she, that's when they started wishing on stars, right? That it was.
Right.
It was, yes.
Because I was very surprised at how often they could wish. They could wish to the Shadow Man. They could wish on the star. They could wish at Oprah Winfrey. They could wish.
The name you're looking for there.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Again, I know all of these characters really, really well.
Oprah's definitely her name.
Yeah. 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 And that's. I really hope that I'm not being like tremendously awfully racist by being like that's Oprah because she's a bigger black woman. No, I thought she voiced. Didn't she voice Mama Odie?
Yeah, she.
I don't know that. But
oh fuck! I hope so.
I'm pretty sure she like she's she voices someone.
I know, and I really hope it was. But that because
it didn't immediately strike me as Oprah when I heard it.
No, for sure. That's
you're right. I wasn't listening for it.
That's why now my brain is going. Oh God!
Right, no. She voiced the mom, Eudora.
Oh, dang it.
So, no, you got the wrong one.
Swing and a miss. Yep.
My secret was Jennifer Lewis.
My secret's revealed. All black women sound alike to me, apparently. I am the worst.
The one voice I placed was right, which is Dr. Facilier is...
Keith David.
Yeah.
Keith David, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great voice choice. He's He's good at being both good guys you trust and people who are deeply sinister. So a sinister guy that makes people trust him.
Yeah, his vocal control is fantastic.
Perfect for a Disney villain.
Yeah. And Ray, who played Raymond, was voiced by Jim Cummings, who the nerds in the audience would know as Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
That does make it even more tragic that he's such a tragic character.
Yes. Yes.
But also really, really wholesome. He's just in love with the star.
He's just in love with the star. Oh, and at the end with the star, we're okay to crush spoilers on this. I mean, if you haven't seen it in a decade. Just at the end when the stars are holding points, their points are touching. So like they're holding hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, shut up. You're crying.
So that also gave me a second to reevaluate the story retroactively. Because at first, he's a firefly in love with the star. How silly, how droll, what a silly little star man. But then when he became a star when he died, I then thought, oh, wait, maybe it's not that he was in love with the star. It's that he was in love with a firefly who also died.
Oh.
And so he was speaking to the star thinking it was her, because that seems to be the firefly mythology that stars are dead fireflies. And so then when he died, he's like going to see his lost love, who was a real firefly and who he really did know and meet.
Yeah, I'd watch that movie.
Yeah, I like that take.
Yeah. That's what movie was almost here. Again, it was sort of there as a subtext, but I interpret it from it, but I don't know if it was made quite so obvious.
Oh, I'd watch a whole sci film on that.
You would Evangeline.
Yeah. Like their whole story. I'm sure she had like a really tragic death and maybe also died a noble death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went another way when I knew they were setting up for some sort of twist when he's like, oh, I'm so in love, the most beautiful firefly in the world. I was almost certain it was going to be a lamp or something.
Yeah. No,
it's that, like a moth to flame type thing.
That could take a whole dark turn there.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't worry, they got their dark turn with him getting crushed to death. And then we got to watch his literal light go out. And you're like, cool, bro, cool.
Yeah.
Also, you're gonna hit us with like a really sad death and a funeral this late in the movie.
Yeah.
And like a slow death too, because like there was time for Lewis to like run to them and be like, he ain't so good. Like this was not.
Yeah. Not taking him to a doctor, not taking him, like, they all knew that he had internally, like, I mean, I guess it's good that they didn't go with, like, a burst belly of, like, all of his light fluid being out, but, like, you know, Disney.
Yeah, you gotta keep it palatable for the kids.
Yeah.
They probably did some concept art and were just like, no.
Too dark, just all of the remainder of his teeth all missing and just...
I don't think the teeth changed. I think those were as broken.
No.
As they were at the beginning.
Didn't he say something about chipping his favorite tooth?
Oh, I think he did earlier, yeah.
That was pretty fun.
He's a fun character. I think he's everyone's favorite.
Yeah. I was really surprised. Like, I really love the concept of Tiana working so hard to get that, mm-hmm. to get that money, to get a restaurant. You know, like, I love the food aspect of it.
This movie always makes me hungry whenever I've seen it.
I mean, yeah, no, I get that too. But like, I love Ratatouille. It's so like, I'm like, give me cartoon food all day. But when they just kind of swooped in when those two money guys were like, oh, you got outbid at the last minute. I was like, surely whoever outbid her is reasons, you know, like there's some sort of tie into this film, but it was just like straight up just life just being like, nah, that money you brought to us and that contracts we said we'd bring, a verbal contract don't mean shit 1928, son. You know, like I got nothing for you. You got outbid by how much? Who fucking knows? You know?
My other thing too is like, she has a full-on song inside the place. Did they give her the keys?
Yep.
Essentially, open, like, the fuck?
I'm not sure that building had a lock. I think she just wandered in.
Yeah.
But she did do like a song. Yes, the song was also a working song montage. Like they did a day's worth of work.
Yeah. And got in the building. Yeah. Probably left that crock pot in there too. The new owner who certainly, or like the new person who bid, definitely got the keys as well. So probably went in, was like, oh, at least this crock pot works. And then took that. Like, just dark.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's so bad.
I'll be honest. I've been trying to decide whether or not I like this movie. I like love the representation. I love like the like New Orleans. The music was awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something that I guess with movies like this, and I guess I'm just so jaded after all these years of just like, I just want to see something new. I want to see them do something different other than like representation, right? Like I wanted.
Oh, I'm going to speak on that later.
Yeah. I'm just like, I don't know. I just kind of like, I sort of saw it and was like, well, I hope the people that like needed to see this got to see it and got to feel good and got to see themselves and like all the best positive things that can come from this. As a movie itself, I was just like, I don't know. I wanted the hillbilly fishermen to be the bad guys, or for it to be the shadow man with those shadow monsters. Like shit was getting real, and I just found the ending to be very like slapdash.
It was a little rushed.
I think
earlier in this film, I feel like it meanders a bit.
Yeah.
Like it's, mm-hmm. Okay, we've done the setup. The setup is some pretty good storytelling. It's maybe some familiar beats, but it set things up pretty fast with pretty high stakes. And then it the middle is really just sort of a meandering through the swamp, hanging out with some fun characters, but not really moving the story forward much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot.
And then the end is like, pull rug out and then rug back real fast, like a switcheroo of rugs. We're still under a rug.
Yeah. There were elements that I really liked. And then, it was just the middle when they were like, oh, we've got, we've got an alligator who plays a trumpet and is scared of humans. I was like, okay, this is great. And we got some toothless bayou firefly, you're like, oh, okay, I love this. And then these three deliverance looking motherfuckers come out and you're like, all right, I'm in it. And then, we meet who I absolutely thought was Oprah Winfrey, who I thought I also thought was a tremendous voice actor, because I was like, that doesn't sound anything like her.
Trying to cover your tracks now. It's not going to work. We've already heard you, Chris.
I could give a fuck. I'm just like, I'm like, somebody wants to come and make claims. Go ahead. But I legit thought it was her, and I thought I was super impressed. I was like, oh, God. Okay. But,
I'll give you credit that she is in the movie. Just not that role.
Yeah, for sure. Just straight up not that role. And I gave her all the props in my pocket for being like, holy she. But it's Oprah. So like, it wouldn't surprise me if she was like, oh yeah, this is a skill I absolutely have. I'd be like, yep, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, it was just so many really beautiful, like really colorful characters. I wanted there to be a voodoo off between Oprah and the Shadow Man. I wanted that. I guess I should call it by the Mama Odie. I wanted Mama Odie and the Shadow Man to have like, the fight of voodoo, and you're kind of like watching this really cool, magic and religion, and like I wanted to see those elements and that history of that culture, of that practice. Which is like a legit beautiful thing. And I was just sorely disappointed that there were so many other avenues that I wanted to walk down. Mm-hmm. And then when they were just sort of like, no, we're going to stay frogs. I was just like,
oh my God. Yeah.
I just had a moment of being like, okay, cool. I'm on board. Let's see what this life is going to be. And then when they were wedding ceremony, I was like, oh yeah, this is okay. Yeah.
I'm gonna jump in on that, because I know what you're saying, where it seems like there were lots of things missing, and there's so much potential of diving into like those other characters, like you said. But I guess I'll just like kind of fast forward to the ending. The thing is, Tiana has worked so hard. Like, you see right from the beginning how hard she has worked since she was fucking 6 years old and feeding the neighborhood all the way up until when she's like, when she's a swamp, and finally the moment comes, she's like, oh, wait, no! I'd rather stay a frog, so that means that I can be with you and all that. It's just like, it was right there! It was right there!
Yeah.
I'm sure they could have figured out some sort of way to, like, compromise. I mean, you know, it does all work out in the end because it is Disney and all that. But I totally forgot that they turn back to humans and she becomes a princess on a fucking technicality.
Yeah.
That was like, it just felt so it feels so anticlimactic when you look at it that way.
Oh, for sure.
It's like, really? This is how you're gonna? I mean, like, you know, I'm happy that the restaurant went up and everything, and it looks like, you know, she did get to pay with it with her hard-earned money and all that. It's just like, she spends so much of the movie working, and I kind of wish that, you know, she hadn't. Could we see her be, you know, an awesome, fun character? I don't know. Because they spend, like, the whole movie working, like, they spend the whole movie establishing how hard she works, and that's it. But also, Barnaby was just like, could we just see her as, like, you know, being a black woman who could just work, or like who could spend some time where we get to learn a little bit more about her? We know she has a great relationship she had a great relationship with her dad, and I guess her mom, though we don't get to see that relationship a whole lot. I don't know. I very much like still have mixed feelings around it. I think a big part of why I still like this movie a lot is because the music is so good.
Music is good. Like, again, the moments in the middle, there's some cool things to do with the way the animation is done and the stylized things they choose to do.
I'm just curious, because when you said, she gets her restaurant in the end, I'm just curious, how in the end does she get the money other than,
the rich friend.
The friend that she's had the entire time, mm-hmm. with whom her parents have had a relationship with John Goodman, who's Charlotte's dad, who I will only refer to as John Goodman. They've known each other. And now when I say, like, it's not working to get somebody to back your restaurant. If you're like, hi, I'm an unreasonably hard worker, a lovely person, you know how good I am as a cook, and you've hired me for this, and you've done this for me. Hey, I want to back a restaurant. I've got a location. I have this much of a down payment. Somebody just bested me with whatever. Can you back my restaurant? And they'd be like, well, no, you know, like, you literally make my favorite thing in the world. You know, like, I don't understand how we came to such a lazy conclusion.
Yeah. There's no reason for her to give the money at that moment rather than at any point earlier invest in her close friend who she knows is a hard worker and an excellent cook.
Yes.
Right? Like, there's 20 years there where she could have been an investor instead.
Yeah.
Somehow that just never occurred to anyone.
Well, I think I get that idea of wanting to be self-made, like, for sure, not wanting to be beholden to anybody. And that's true of, like, almost anyone. But there is a level of, letting pride get in the way of being like, hey, I'm this close. I'm so close. And if she's wishing on stars to help make a dream happen, And you know, good old dad's adage is like, hey, you can wish, but hard work is going to get you there, right? It's going to get you the rest of the way. And there's just an element of like, hey, that uber wealthy family that is hired our family over and over and over, you know, like, if she's bringing home, let's say, what looks like 6 cents and then plunks it into a drawer with a full change jar and then reveals the several, dozens change jars that she's already filled. I'm like, clearly she's got the diligence. Clearly she's got the hard work. And all you'd have to do is present that to John Goodman and he'd be like, well, yeah, I'm not a fucking idiot. Let's do this thing. But no, like, it confused me and it just made me kind of go, well, so she became a frog and was going to give up on her dream, I guess, just do some bayou cooking out of a pumpkin again. And then and to her husband, who did he learn the value of hard work?
Yeah, I think that's what I want to transition to right now is, I think Tiana learned her lesson, I think. Like, she put in hard work and she learned that was still important, but she did learn to also have friends and make time for friends and to have joy in what she does. Those are things she learned along the way. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much the frog learned, or at least I don't think he had such a journey to make from being such a lazy.
He learned how to mince mushrooms.
He learned how to do a single kitchen chore.
One thing.
Yeah, like literally.
Moderately well.
Yeah, literally cut this thing until it's the smallest you can make it. And that's what he learned. You know, like, and that's something you give to a child who's getting in the way, and you just kind of go, hey, and you give him a red pepper and be like, make this as small as you can. I mean, provided you can trust him with a knife, but like. Yeah. Mm. It, yeah, like, and he just comes back and he's like, I'm helping. And I think that's literally what he brings out in the tray at the very end, where he's like, I'm helping. And he gets John Goodman. It's fucking like seven vegetables that are just completely minced. You're like, yeah.
I'd like to think that he becomes like a waiter or something at Tiana's restaurant.
I do cut to him being a waiter at the end.
And, you know, like him having to, like, you know, deal with the shitty customers. Like, you know, put him in a job in customer service. That'll teach him a lot.
Well, the fact that he was referring to her as the waitress the whole time, I'm like, I really like that. I did not catch that, because I think by then I was just going like, what is – how – okay, just because like they got married and all of a sudden they had the restaurant, and then I was like, wait a minute, and my brain went, oh, so his parents there were two older people who I couldn't tell like if they were they both like I thought her dad was there at the end because I thought it was her mother and her father, but then I was like, oh, is that his mother and father?
There are two royals.
I was gonna say
assumed to be his parents, who I guess are just happy that he's marrying anyone, because my immediate thought was like, wouldn't you guys be like, what are you doing with a commoner?
I haven't
met her. This is like the next day after they become human again.
Yeah. And how do you have that conversation of like, how did you two meet? And
became animals.
Yeah. I think
they were literal animals.
Yeah. Just being like, America is fucking weird. You know, like, like, I don't know if they were just visiting for the first time, but like, I thought, yeah, I'm like, so my presumption, I'm just curious, get your thought out, Chris. What made you know that it was the rich friend who provided the backing and not the parents? Because as soon as
when she's kissing Naveem as a frog, she's saying, like, one of the last things he says is, like, if we come back a human again, you still have to give Tiana her money. And she's like, of course I would.
Yeah.
Like, that was never part of the deal. I'll even though you guys are in love, I'm so happy for my friend, I would still give Tiana the money. And he's like, okay. And then
Yeah.
Like the one redeeming friendship moment over from Charlotte.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because she's kind of pushy otherwise and really does ignore her friend.
Yeah. You're going to come to my house. You're going to do all the cooking. Here's some money that she just pulls out of her dad's, like, yeah, there is
also just a wad of money. Like, this is enough, right?
This is enough.
She's ridiculously spoiled and unaware of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Poor John Goodman.
But yes. I don't think the prince earns, our protagonist's love. Even if, you know, it's a prince and she's a waitress, I don't think the love is earned necessarily. I feel like they fast track that a little.
Oh, I'd hard agree with that.
Yeah. I agree. Good. The other thing I'm going to point out that weirded me out a lot during this movie, and I want to see if anyone else felt this way. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of beauty, glam shot moments sort of seen through Naveen's eyes of Tiana as a frog. Like, he's falling in love with the person, but like, what a beautiful frog moments in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The light catches her in a certain way and he's staring at a frog.
Yeah, a lot of moonlight bayou shots of a beautiful frog.
Which, like, that's weird, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, like, I think
it gives you a sense that he kind of was cool with them staying frogs because that's what he was into.
Yeah. And there's also, like, that moment in the beginning, shortly after they become frogs, where I think they're... Like, they go into, like, a tree trunk to escape from the alligators, and it's, like, insinuated that he wants to, like, have sex with her.
Yeah.
Even though they're both frogs.
It's more of like a cuddle up, but it's definitely making a pass. Yeah.
Definitely making a pass. It's a frog. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What is this? What are you doing?
Every time I see those beautiful images of like, or those images of like her in the moonlit bayou, and then you see those, it's the sultry slow blink. And I'm like, are you trying to elicit that I like the feeling of you want to fuck this frog, don't you? And I'm just kind of like, no.
Yeah,
like,
that's what Disney's trying to do to you.
Yeah,
and the character of Naveem is into it. Which means there is definitely some frog-based role play in their relationship going forward.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they also, with like those like glamour shots, it also just makes me think, like, it's Disney has a track record of this, especially like, you know, The Lion King. Can you feel the love tonight between Simba and Nala?
Oh, yeah.
When cousin. They're in the grass and she's totally giving like fuck me eyes and like, you're a lion. What am I watching?
Yeah. And that's your cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also that. Oh, boy. But at least in all those situations, we're in the POV of another animal. And so it's an animal on animal lust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These
yeah.
are humans in animal form lusting on their animal forms.
Oh, fair.
Baby, cover yourself with that mucus tonight because that's what I'm into. Like, that's what I know is going to happen going forward. I don't feel comfortable about it.
I did enjoy the mucus gag. That was a fun return bit because I'm like you. Yeah, I was looking for fun jokes that I didn't see coming because there's a lot of like, oh, you've got the big awkward dog. And I'm like, okay, well, all the food's going to get destroyed because we've got the big awkward dog and it's going to chase somebody. Yeah, like looking for those bits where you kind of a few of Naveen's lines where I think when he kisses not the princess, but when he kisses Tiana and then she changes and he says like, that's new or whoa or something. It was just a single line kind of punch. And I was like, okay, yeah. Because once you start calling out the absurdity of what's happening, everybody can get on board and be like, this is fucking ridiculous. You know, like which is why I wanted Dr. Facilier to talk to, like, I really wanted him to talk to his shadow. I wanted there to be like, show me a little bit of interaction, like the shadow trying to pour cream in his coffee or something. Like,
yeah, the shadow's a cool enough character. They could have used him more specifically.
For sure.
Absolutely. Cool.
And especially to your point that he's the sidekick, right? Then show us some sidekick stuff. Show us like, yeah, I wanted to see why he was a failure because he was clearly his grift was working. And it just and like, yeah, I wanted so much more story on Dr. Facilier of was he like did he want more money because he wanted to be the wealthiest in the world or was he destitute? How did he become initially beholden to the shadow creatures or whatever? Like just all of the questions. And I almost called her Mama Hotep. I think Mama Hotep is from the Mummy.
No, you're thinking Bubba Hotep, which is the movie where
Bruce Campbell
plays Elvis getting attacked by a mummy.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna mix all that up. I wanted to know like if she had to answer to those same, I don't know, call them gods, those shadow creatures, like if that was somebody she also had to answer to. And so there was that element of like, is she tapping into what you can call like dark powers or anything like that?
No,
are those shadow creatures inherently evil or just minions of the next world? You know, like,
that was actually something I think they put in because, you know, I think this was trying to do a bunch of representation type stuff and then realized it was also Disney and stepping on its own feet a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
So you make the villain a voodoo practitioner who's the evil shadow man. Everyone knows voodoo is evil, but it's not supposed to be. Voodoo is supposed to be a neutral practice.
Yes.
So their way to sort of balance that out was put in an evil voodoo practitioner as the villain because that's going to work. And also to put in a good voodoo practitioner to sort of balance it out. That they're not just representing voodoo as pure evil.
But it's also not really balancing it out because she doesn't get nearly as much screen time. So you don't get to see like the good sides of voodoo, if that makes any sense.
It does. Because it's, I don't. Yeah, like, I mean, I guess I disassociated her practice with voodoo just because it's like, is it a different element of voodoo? I guess it was just that question of like, where is the power derived? In Dr. Facilier, he derives his power from these shadow masters, right?
His, like, friends on the other side.
His friends on the other. He was like, I've got this and I've got this. And everything was like, he had the totem that he had to use to get the blood from the prince and then keep that. And you're like, okay, so like, he gets gifts and then he becomes beholden to them in the payment of souls or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she seemingly conjured magic internally like a wizard, or like just kind of created her own, could change the shape of this snake to whatever she wanted. She could do all these incredible things. To me, it became that disassociation of like, oh, what she's doing is not voodoo. It's magic. And what he's doing is voodoo.
I think they were both beholden by one same rule, is they never did anything for themselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like so that as a rule.
Maybe that's the core of the magic rule, but maybe they have some sort of different source. Her source may be the bayou itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. She draws it from the earth around her, like mana from Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, I don't know if that's what they were thinking, but
maybe.
Probably.
But also, like, we appreciate that she still uses hot sauce in that gumbo.
Yeah,
she still does. She uses Tabasco.
Tabasco. Yes.
Ugh. I was just like, what? Which is just the shittiest hot sauce. As somebody who loves hot sauce, I'm like, she was just like, it needs just a couple of dashes of hot sauce, and then she pulls out this jar of fucking vinegar, like mildly spicy vinegar water, and then just like dunk dunk dunk, there you go, a little commercial for you. And I was just like, what?
Whatever.
You think they paid money for that?
Oh, certainly.
You know, I'm sure there's like product placement that we missed too, because it's Disney.
Yeah, probably. That's a riverboat, classic riverboat commercials.
Oh god. Yeah. One thing I just noticed as we're talking about like sidekicks and all that, and how like I think the sidekick that they were trying to push on us was, what's his name, Lawrence, like Naveen's assistant or something, who then goes to work with like Dr. Facilier or Mr.
He's really a henchman villain though.
Oh yeah, I don't know. He didn't really strike me as much of like a definitely more henchman than villain, but I think because the henchman was just like, that's more like that sidekick who has just been pushed on. I'm just like, I don't care about you.
Oh yeah.
I completely forgot about him as a character midway as we're recording this.
His actions are not forgivable, but he is justified in his want for revenge against Naveen, because he's not good at the start of the film. He's not a good guy.
Yeah, he's beaten around. He's you know, like and I guess I wanted to see some redemption. I wanted to see some sort of
guy characteristic of him.
Yeah, I wanted to see something come around. I wanted either he doubles down and he's just like, no, I am evil, and then he tries to drown Naveen in a puppy or whatever, where you're like, okay, so, and then I can thoroughly hate this guy. Yeah, drag him to the pits of hell, just like the bad guy at the end of Ghost. Or I wanted to see him go, oh my god, I've seen the error of my ways, Prince Naveen, thank you so much for blah 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 blah. Or Naveen being like, yo, I treated you like mad shit, son, I'm so sorry.
I would have loved that. It would have also just given you more to be like, okay, Naveen's actually like a good guy, whereas like watching it, just like, Tiana, what do you see in this dude?
Yeah, if he had been like, hey man, you work so hard, and now I know the value of hard work, and I can't even imagine how appalling you must find me. Here's the riches and rewards, or like whatever. But instead, it was just, nah. They were like, nah, this guy who got like kind of talked into this, fuck this guy. Like, isn't he the worst? You know how we all make the best decisions all the time, no matter what? Yeah, this guy made one mistake by a very charismatic man who had his shadow do some trick. Like, this this shadow man convinces you that you can get rich and wealthy and that you'll team up together.
He doesn't make the mistake that Naveem doesn't also make. So that's the thing. So if we forgive Naveem, we should forgive him. But I don't forgive either of them.
Fuck those guys.
All right. I think we're going to wrap it up. I think we've had lots of talk about this. I will end us with a final thought of a little bit of uncomfortable math that I did.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh, I love this.
Let's go.
So near the end of the film, nearly the last line of this film, they make a mention that Charlotte is dancing with Naveem's younger brother.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Who is 6 and a half. And she says, I've waited this long. Okay, I can wait. So I did generous math. If she is 18, unless it's okay for us to think that she should be getting married, and he's 6 and a half, for him to be 18 and it to therefore be okay, that's 11 and a half years, and that puts her at 29 and a half years old.
Okay. Okay.
That's best case scenario.
I will respectively refute that she has to be 18 simply because in 1928, if you weren't married by the time you were, I don't know, 19 or 20 or whatever, you were a barren dust bowl of a woman or whatever. So I'm going to go like, I'll say she's 14. And even then, super, super generous. because it would also make the presumption that Tiana is around the same age. So if she's 14, this is a 14-year-old trying to get a restaurant. So I think that's probably
doing a lot of child labor.
And doing a lot of child labor. But thank goodness
she was a kid too.
Yeah. Those stupid laws didn't exist at that time, you know. Don't worry about that. No such thing as child labor.
You're happy about this defense? You're feeling proud of this defense, Chris?
Buddy, I have to double down. I said that shit about Oprah. I'm like, at this point, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Enough. All right. Thanks for joining me, Christopher Bowman. Thanks for joining me, Mary Chris Rivera.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
This was a blast.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we came up with, but we want to hear from you. Tell us your thoughts. You can find us on Twitter at BreakAWishPod, email breakawishpod@gmail.com, join the BreakAWish discussion group on Facebook, and you can support the show by writing a review, telling a friend, or buying a t-shirt on TeePublic. All this information at breakawish.ca. For more Mary Chris Rivera, check out the Tita Collective podcast, formerly called Chica Chica with the Titas, where multidisciplinary artists of the Tita Collective explore Philippine art and how it reflects on their experiences as members of the Philippine diaspora in Canada. For more Christopher Bowman, you can check out his trailer for Vicious Fun, a horror slasher comedy that takes place in the 80s, and look for it on a streaming service shortly. This is a Kicks and Giggles Entertainment production, hosted by Maddox Gamble, theme by Matthew Reed, cover art by Justin Langford, and a proud member of the Sonar Podcast Network. More podcasts at thesonarnetwork.com. So, what would you wish for?
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Sonar!
Now on the Sonar Network, a new podcast from comedy duo Peter and Chris.
So there's a successful podcast called My Dad Wrote a Porno, and so I wrote a porno.
They didn't decide what kind of podcast they wanted to do, so they'll just do them all.
Nicolas Cage, this is Peter, I'm part of a...
Say no more, I know who you are!
A podcast where each episode promises, this time, it's different.
Act 1, is sitting in a hot car really that hot? We investigate.
Watch on YouTube or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You're going to like the way you laugh. We guarantee it.
Hey, I'm Dungeon Master Tom, and this is Dwarven Moss, an actual play D&D podcast. I'm going to be taking my two friends, comedian Chris Siddiqui.
Well, hello.
And musician Jay McCarroll.
Yo.
Their very first official campaign.
Yes.
Every episode is fully scored with original music and soundscapes. So here's just a little taste of the insanity of Dwarven Moss.
Hold on!
Bang! That sounds done, Lord.
Oh, my word! My mother and spear! Knights!
Eight, laddie!
I'm gonna jump
out. Let's jump! Go, go, go!
You guys smash through the window. Roll an acrobatics test. I'll see how you guys land.
20, crit.
20.
Whoa!
20. Two natural 20s.
We both land in superhero positions.
This is like 80 hits. Yeah.
Hey, as those hits are happening, a slow zoom up on Wendell's face, and he goes,
he's beginning to believe.
Episode 1 is available now. Subscribe to Dwarven Moss on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are available.